Hello and welcome to Radio Edutalk. This is David Noble and Dalgetty Bay. Delighted to welcome to the show this evening a very good friend of many years standing, Ollie Bray, who's head teacher of Kingussie High School in the Scottish Highlands. So welcome back to Edutalk, Ollie.
Thanks, David. It's great to speak to you. I was just reflecting that it's probably been a couple of years since we actually spoke, although we've obviously engaged in social media, you know, quite a lot in that time.
Absolutely, but I know that listeners, as well as John and myself, have been kind of eagerly anticipating you coming on the show, particularly in light of your big move a few years ago to the Scottish Highlands. So, but just to start off with, Ollie, could you listeners will know the name Ollie Bray, and many will have engaged with you, and met you, worked with you, indeed, in previous incarnations. So, could you just give us a kind of flavour of your career within education?
Yeah, sure. So I've been working in Scottish education for nearly 20 years now. I've only ever taught in Scotland. I did my undergraduate degree at the University of Plymouth on the south coast, and I'm from about 2 hours up the road from there, from a sunny seaside town called Weymouth. But I moved to Scotland in the early 20s, and my career started at the National Outdoor Training Centre at Glenmore Lodge in Aviemore. And it was while I was there that I decided that I was going to do my PGCE, as it was then, now obviously PGDE, and I did that at Murray House in geography. And I think probably at the time I always thought that I would go back to working in the outdoor industry. But if you sort of wind the clock back nearly 20 years, you had to do your sort of 2-year probationary period, it was then, and I ended up teaching in a great introductory school, Knox Academy, in Haddington in East Lothian, as a geography teacher, and I was there for a good few years, becoming actually acting principal teacher of outdoor education, and then post Macrone and the faculty system coming in, I got an early promotion to one of these kind of strange faculty posts, which at the time was called principal teacher citizenship and values, which I think was probably quite innovative at the time, because it was looking at things like wider achievement. It was looking at things like the curriculum. It was looking at things like the Duke of Edinburgh Award Scheme, the Scottish Youth Parliament, and all these bits and pieces. And I thoroughly enjoyed my time there. An opportunity came up, though, to become a principal teacher of geography. And I sidestepped to Dunbar Grammar School. And quite soon after that, I had a chance to do an acting deputy head teacher role at Musselburgh Grammar School again in East Lothian, and that was my sort of first experience of management. I was quite young at the time; I was only 27 when I took on my first DHT post, so it was quite an eye opening thing. But I had a thoroughly good 3 years there, and I guess it was for me, it was still a really exciting time in Scottish education where you'll remember this as well as anybody, David. It was the Web 2.0 era where blogs and podcasts and games based learning and animation and technology was just starting to become really, really possible in schools if you had the enthusiasm to tolerate it, really. And from there, I was lucky enough to be seconded to an organisation at the time which was called Learning and Teaching Scotland, which eventually became Education Scotland, where I had the grand title of National Advisor for Emerging Technologies in Learning. So supporting schools around technology at the time of the incubation, really, of Curriculum for Excellence. I did some work for government and policy during that time as well. And then I found myself in a really, you know, interesting situation where we were moving into the GLOW 2.0 era. I didn't necessarily really agree with all the decisions that were being made about that at that time. And I kind of had three choices, really. And the choice was either to stay in Education Scotland and become a full-time civil servant, or to go back to East Lothian and to do some sort of job, because I was entitled to employment there, but no longer at Musselburgh. Or to find something else. And I think I mentioned at the start of my story that I started off when I first moved to Scotland in Aviemore, and the deputy head post came up at at Granton Grammar School. I kind of applied for it quite late in the day. I think it was the night before it was due in. I ended up getting the post and relocating up here to Highland. And then just a year later, the job at Kingussie came up. So this is my fifth year now as head teacher of Kingussie. And I'm sure we'll get a chance to sort of talk a little bit about what I've been doing there in a minute. But that's kind of my potted education career, if you like. As part of that, I've had an amazing opportunity during secondments and contacts that I've made up to work with, you know, educators all over the world, educators all over Scotland. I've had a great opportunity to do a lot of consultancy work, you know, particularly over the last 10 years. I still do a bit of consultancy work for education companies and technology companies and local authorities and international schools. So yeah, there's lots going on really in both my, you know, in both my professional life at school, but also my hobby, which is education. I'm fascinated by learning, and I'm fascinated by learning with technology. But more recently, I've become fascinated by, you know, how can we change the system to make it more efficient, more relevant to children and young people? And I'm sure that we'll perhaps get a chance to chat about that later as well.
Kingussie is a place that I fell in love with a long time ago when I became a glory hunter in the world of shinty, and I spent many weekends up there and many times attending the Kamanagh Cup finals that Kingussie invariably would win. But for listeners' benefit, could you give a kind of flavour of the environment that you're working in, the community and the kind of context of the wider Scottish Islands, and then touch on what some of the local challenges are?
Yeah, so we'd be classed as an accessible rural school. We've got about 410 pupils in the school from S1 to S6. So for international listeners, that's from 11 to 18 years of age. We're in the heart of the Cairngorms National Park. Scotland's only got two national parks, the Cairngorms National Park and the Loch Lomond National Park, although obviously within Scotland and indeed within the Highlands, there are lots and lots of areas of outstanding natural beauty. There are rural challenges of living here, not least because of rural poverty, but also because we live in the Spey Valley, a very, very elongated linear strip of land following the River Spey. Again, for international listeners, the Spey is famous for its whiskies like Balwhinnie and Macallan and Knockandoo and things like that. And Kingussie as a school in the catchment is an absolutely fascinating one. And the reason it's a fascinating one is that we've actually got very few children that live in Kingussie that come to the school. And the reason for that is that when the school was built, it was the capital of Badenoch, which is at the south end of the Spey Valley. But for those of you that know the Highlands well, a very famous town is called Abbeywar. It's a boom town. It boomed in the 1960s and early 1970s because of the ski industry. And now 2/3 of our pupils live in Abbeymoor, and we have to bus them in every day, and we bus a lot of other children in from outlying communities as well. So we face a real challenge in the sense of our school that children know that it's their school, but they don't necessarily relate to it as their community because so many of them are bused in. There's other real unique challenges as well. We're actually geographically the highest secondary school, I think, in the whole of the UK, which means that when it does snow, we tend to get a lot of snow. We are shut quite a lot during the winter time because of snow days. Not because the staff can't necessarily get in, but because, again, we can't run the buses to get 2/3 of the pupils in from Abbeymoor. So there are some real challenges there. We've got, I believe, and I think probably sometimes unrecognised, some real challenges with rural poverty. The main industry here where I live is really the tourist industry. The tourist industry is quite cash rich. There's a lot of 0 hours contracts. It's very, very busy in the summertime, but in the wintertime we're very reliant on the snow. And a great friend of mine, Rob Edmonds, who used to run a ski shop in Abbeymoor itself, used to tell me that every snowflake that fell was a pound in his pocket. And if you know a bit about Scotland or the UK or you were around in Scotland last year, that you'll know that last year was a particularly bad winter. And as a result of that, there'll be economic impact, on the area for the next few years. And to put that into context, Aviemore and the surrounding area has had a 20% increase in the use of food banks over the last 18 months. So there are some hidden challenges there to do with rural poverty that we have to deal with as well. David's mentioned shinty, which is a Highland sport. I'm not going to describe it well, but again, for people that don't know what shinty is, it's kind of like a very violent hockey, in many ways. It's a great sport. We've got a very, very strong school team because we've got the old firm, if you like, of shinty coming to Kinusey High School. That's the kids from Kinusey and also from Newton Moore. And again, another interesting thing about the school is that because of the shinty and because of the investment in sport and shinty, we've got a really, really fit bunch of kids that we're able to transfer, not just to shinty, but other sports like football and rugby and hockey and other things as well. And another interesting story about Kinusey because of the winter sports is that the last time that we checked is that we've got more Olympic athletes that have come from Kinusey than any other state school in the UK. And that's because of the skiing and the snowboarding and the curling and the cross-country skiing and increasingly the windsurfing as well. So yeah, just a real interesting mix of stuff going on, which makes it a truly comprehensive school to work in.
And just going back, Ollie, to 5 years when you were appointed head teacher at Kinusey, how did you go about connecting with the various parts of the local community in the first instance, and also what kind of approach did you bring to your kind of leadership style? Appreciating the fact you've held many prominent roles within Scottish education, but obviously very different coming into to be the kind of figurehead for a school and for a community.
Yeah, I mean, I guess there were going back to my kind of story of my career is that when I worked for Sport Scotland or the Scottish Sports Council as it was called then, I lived in Aviemore, and just as I was leaving Aviemore to go and do my PGCE down in Edinburgh, it was a PGCE in geography. And if you'd have asked me at the time, what's your ideal job? I'd have said I'd love to come and be the geography teacher at Kinusey High School, because I can't think of many better schools to be a geography teacher, right in the heart of the National Park, where you've got the River Spey literally running 100 metres from the school. You've got the northern quarries and all those glacial features. You're an hour away from the Murray coast. You've got the inner city or the city features of Inverness and the rural urban features of again within Badenoch and Strathspey. So that would be my ideal job. But of course, the interesting thing is that the geography teacher nearly 20 years ago, it's the same geography teacher that we've got at Kinusey High School now, who is a lady called Aileth Stewart, and she's absolutely brilliant. She's still enthusiastic. She's still running innovative lessons. And she's one of these geography teachers that probably landed the dream job and therefore decided to stay there for the whole of her career. So interestingly for me, I guess, is that I'd always been looking for an opportunity to try and get back into the Highlands, because my personal interests, outside of education are things like skiing and climbing and cycling and cross-country skiing and mountain biking and all these sorts of things. But for me, that there was just never the opportunity of the job to come up. So first of all, there weren't any geography teacher jobs, and there weren't any faculty head teacher jobs, and then there weren't any, head of geography jobs. And eventually, just through circumstance, I ended up getting a deputy head teacher job, and then the head teacher job at Kinusey. So for me, it was an interesting thing, because I felt like I kind of knew the community, partly because I'd been working at Granton for the year and I'd been living in the Kinusey catchment during that time, but partly because a load of my friends from almost 20 years ago were at that kind of age where a lot of their kids were 8, 9, or 10 and just about to embark on that journey of going into secondary school. But unlike some of the other schools that I worked in when I was working in the Central Belt and in East Lothian, I consciously made the choice. And we discussed this, at home with my partner Louise, is that in order, I think, to be a rural head teacher, you're really a community figure. You've got to be part of the community. You've got to live in the community. You've got to, you know, really roll up your sleeves and get involved in community events, because if the community doesn't accept you, it's quite difficult to be a head teacher, I think, of a rural primary school or a rural secondary school. So for the last 5 years, you know, we've lived in the community catchment. We're very, very involved in the local community. We go to the local pub, in the local restaurant, you know, and we teach in the local school, and it's been very much an approach of openness and transparency, and hopefully, touch wood, doing an okay job at the moment, and therefore I would say that the vast majority of the community has kind of accepted that. So that in itself is a good stimulus to sort of keep sort of raising standards and not messing up, really.
And what's been the kind of main focus? If you look at when you came into the post, you know, what had to change, or what developments did you work on initially, and how have those continued or changed in the subsequent years? And also, you know, how have you continued to develop your own professionalism?
Yeah, well, it's been an interesting journey. So the history of community is that in 2000, so I took over the post in between August 2013 and August 2013 and October 2013, and I was doing a few days in both schools during that time, and then I took over permanently in October 2013, but in 2012 the school was inspected, and the inspection, you know, wasn't particularly favourable of the school. And I'll be open and honest. I don't mind being open and honest about it, as I think that there were some things probably within the inspection that maybe weren't fair on the school and fair on the staff at the time and fair on the leadership at the time. And there were probably, if I'm being honest, some things that needed to be improved as well. But without wishing to go into sort of too much detail of that, what I was faced with when I came in was an inspection report which basically said five things, and the five things were: you needed to improve attainment, improve the curriculum, improve the support for pupils, and improve positive destinations. So you could have actually summarised those five things as one thing, which is improve everything. So it did then become a bit of a journey for us in terms of what we were going to do. I knew that when I took over the post almost a year after the inspection, that Education Scotland were going to be coming in and visiting straight away. They gave me about 4 weeks in post before I got the phone call saying they were coming for their first return visit, which actually I found incredibly helpful. I thought was incredibly supportive. We knew that we had a lot of work to do within the school to do all of the things that I've mentioned there, but also to fit in with the inspection framework and to make that work. But there were things that we definitely need to do in terms of attainment, achievement, curriculum, support for pupils, positive destinations, things that I've mentioned. And then at the end of that first follow-up visit, I had what I think was a very, very good, a very, very supportive conversation with the lead inspector at the time, which was around, would they come back in 12 months or would they give us 18 months to do it? And I knew that we really needed 18 months for them to come back, because I needed to get 2 years worth of attainment data in. And, you know, I've done a lot of academic reading over the years. I'm fascinated in school improvement and system-wide improvement. And I know that from everything that you read, you cannot transform a school, you know, in 2 years. It takes longer than that, unless it's a quick fix and therefore it doesn't work. And that's what you see with a lot of these academies down south. If they send in the so-called superhead, they improve attainment overnight, they leave, and the whole thing falls down because you've not built those building blocks and that sustainability into it. So I had, I think, a really productive conversation with Education Scotland at the time, which I honestly felt was completely supportive. They agreed to come back in 18 months' time. They came back in November 2015, and we had a really, really positive, inspection sign off. They're very, very happy with the progress that we've made, the progress that we made on attainment, achievement, the curriculum, pupil support, and positive destinations. And there's just like loads of stuff in there that I could maybe talk about in terms of what we've done. And I'm very happy to do that if that would be useful.
Yeah, well, if you just take us through, I suppose, the one or two developments that have kind of pleased you most and made the most kind of impact on young people?
Yeah, so I think that, well, as I say, there's lots of things. I mean, basically, people. I mean, I think I was in a very fortunate position because for my 4 years working at LTS and the government and then latterly for a short time in Education Scotland, I'd seen a lot of stuff. I've seen a lot of school leaders in Scotland, the UK, elsewhere. And when I took on the job at Kingsley, I remember sort of saying in interviews that I want to apply everything that I've learnt, you know, into this little school here, because I've never been a school head teacher. I've worked with head teachers. I've talked about school improvement, but I want to kind of prove that all of these things are possible from the things that I've read, you know, and the things that I've seen. And we did, you know, we did have a bit of a plan, but it wasn't your traditional improvement plan with stages. It was really a case of, right, we're going to take those four headings that I've already mentioned, the ones around attainment, achievement, curriculum, support for pupils and positive destinations, and we're going to try and do everything at once, you know, because we're not looking at tweaking things here. We're looking at it completely radical change. And just like any, I guess, just like any school, we started off with staff around kind of our vision and values. You know, we created a very, very simple vision statement around, you know, that we're a school that's got traditional values, but we use a modern approach. Where possible, we like to support our learners through the use of local environment and digital technology. I'm big on traditional. I think things like assembly, things like uniform, things like children being polite are incredibly important. But I also think that the modern approach in terms of pedagogy and teaching and learning are really, really important as well to try and equip those kids with 21st century skills or whatever, you know, whatever phrase that you want to use. So we kind of did lots of stuff. I mean, just going back to the kind of the mission statement, the vision statement there is that, you know, for a school in the middle of National Park, there was very little outdoor learning going on at the time. And one of the reasons for that was because staff didn't feel they could take kids out of school because the approval process had become overly bureaucratic. So using my outdoor education background, we simplified that considerably. You know, we made sure that a key part of departmental improvement plans was about getting kids outside, using the local environment, not just for adventure activity, but also for core curriculum activity. We introduced things like the Duke of Edinburgh Award Scheme, which had been absent from the school for the last 10 years. I'm really pleased that last year, for example, there were about 15 young people that have got all the way through to their gold award and are actively doing that now. And we've had some gold awards that have been awarded. And from 4 years ago, there was nothing. We couldn't even recruit kids to take part in the Duke of Edinburgh Award Scheme because the kids didn't know what it was. So there was a bit of a publicity thing that was going on there as well, sort of embracing the outdoors. And then the modern technology part of it was that I've been working for a long time in technology. I've been involved in a project with the Highland Council. I've been working quite closely with Louise Jones, who worked for the Highland Council at the time, around what we were going to do for the next stages of the ICT refresh. We'd worked out that it was possible to reduce the amount of managed devices within a school and replace them with cheaper personal devices that weren't managed. Louise had done a big piece of work researching what this device might be with different children, different staff. We managed to pull in some money from the Scottish Government Innovation Fund to fund a pilot at Kingsley High School, and we were able to provide all of the learners in S1, S2 and S3 with their own Chromebook at the time. So there was a big drive suddenly on digital technology as well, sort of making that work. We've since continued to roll out that Chromebook rollout. So now within Kingsley High School, all of the learners between S1 to S5 have got their own Chromebook. Next year it'll be S1 to S6. We've seen a huge amount of benefit to using the technology in school, but also encouraging the staff to work together through the use of technology. And as a result of that, the model, the Chromebook model, is now being rolled out across the whole of Highland. So just to give you an idea of the sort of scale of that, that's about 22,000 devices that were rolled out across Highland over the next 24 months because of the pilot work that went to Harrow and Canusium. That's something that we're very, very proud of in terms of what we've done. The technology aspect of it and the outdoor learning aspect of it is only one part of the jigsaw, if you like. You can have as much technology in the world if you don't have appropriate staff CPD and if you don't have the buy-in from leadership. But the bit that I think lots of people miss is that if you don't have an appropriate curriculum, then young people aren't going to achieve. And I stripped, when we looked at the curriculum at Canusium, we stripped everything right back to the seven principles of curriculum design. The things that I personally think that people have forgotten about in those early CFE documents. I know the seven principles well, you know, because I talk about them a lot. I think that they're some of the most valuable aspects of some of that original guidance around challenge and enjoyment, around breadth, around progression, depth, coherence, just remember the others, relevance and personalization and choice. And we strip back with the senior management team and staff in terms of what did this look like. And we also had a good hard think about our curriculum at Canusium. We thought about, well, what are the things and the employment opportunities that are happening in the local area that we need to take sight of? And we actually developed a really poor acronym around the what we called the five A's at the time, and that was around, we felt that we needed a program that would support activity tourism because the outdoor industry was so big in Canusium. We thought that we needed a program that would support the A9 because the dualling of the A9 that's currently going on, that's going to go on now until 2030, you know, we're told, with Transport Scotland. We thought that we'd need a program to support a place called Ancanis Moor, which is a proposed housing development in Aviemore, but it wasn't really Ancanis Moor. It was really more about the construction industry and the building industry that's currently going on in the national park. We then started to get a little bit woolly with our 5A acronym, and we started to sort of say, well, we need to be able to support kids in energy, like a wind farm, and sort of to provide them some training for that, and also this whole idea of anywhere working, and we used those kind of sort of five industries along with the digital technology to think about how we would change our curriculum offering, particularly in the senior phase. And if any of the listeners have heard me speak recently at any conferences about curriculum design, and I'm very happy to share the paper with you, David, that I've written on this. You can maybe stick it up on the blog links. And that's around my current mantra is that your curriculum drives attainment. Yes, you've got to get good teachers. Yes, we're all trying to get more A's than B's, more B's than C's, and these sorts of things. But actually, it's about your curriculum offering, which is the most important thing. And if a school has got a traditional curriculum, e.g. you only offer geography, modern studies, and history, and you've got to fit kids into geography, history, and modern studies classes, and they don't like, and they're not engaged by geography, history, and modern studies, not because the teacher's not very good, but because they just cannot relate to the content around it, then actually you're probably setting those kids up for A, failure in the first instance, A, classroom disruption, but it's going to do nothing about your attainment data. So we took the 5A principle, the activity tourism, the A9, the Ancanis Moor, the wind farm, the anywhere working, and we thought, how can we improve our curriculum offering in the senior phase to take these things on board? So we are now, for example, in the third year of a partnership with Inverness College, University of Highlands and Islands, where we run a national certificate course in activity tourism, and that's at SCQF level 6. I'm always surprised with how many head teachers that I speak to in Scotland that don't understand the SCQF framework around that, and that they're not accessing qualifications like national certificates or national progression awards or professional development awards that have previously been the domain of colleges, where they're not bringing them into schools because that's what Curriculum for Excellence was all about. I knew that 4 years ago because I'd seen the documentation, I'd seen it being implemented in some schools, and I wanted to do that in Canusium. So we're now 3 years into that program. Young people can do that course. That's broadly equivalent to two hires at grade C, We've got a lot of success in it. Young people go on and they access HNC, HND courses at college. We've brought in things like rural skills at National 4. We've progressed rural skills to an MPA at level 5 using local partners where children can specialise in things like aquaculture or equestrian studies or gamekeeping or forestry. And it's our partners that deliver the practical parts of the courses. And in school, we deliver the theory part to make it incredibly efficient to run. We've brought in travel and tourism. We've brought in construction and practical metalwork. We've got engineering science, in the curriculum. And we've brought in things like digital passport and PC passport, as well as trying to improve facilities like a STEM room and a robotics lab to try and get kids fired up about the possibility of digital technology. And to put it into context is that if we looked at the curriculum in the senior phase, that's S4 to S6 at King's Lee High School, in 2012, 2013, when I took over, we offered 19 subjects, and I mean discrete subjects there. I'm not talking about National 4, National 5, higher advanced, but 19 subjects. Some of them would finish at National 5. Some of them you could progress all the way through to kind of higher with a couple of advanced hires. And in 2017, 2018, this year, we offer 42 different subjects at various different levels within that. And the point that I try and make to other head teachers when they ask me about the really positive story, I think, about the increase of attainment at King's Lee High School, how we've done it, is that I say that we've managed to do that. We've managed to double our curriculum offering at the same time as we've reduced our staff because of cutbacks, by three people. So the point that I sort of try and make to them is that it is possible, but you have to look at your timetable in a different way. You have to look at your curriculum in a different way. You have to timetable S4, S5 and S6 together in a small rural school. You have to work with staff so they accept bi-level and tri-level classes. You have to work with staff so they understand that actually, do you know what? There are some courses that only need 4 periods a week. Other courses need 5 periods a week. Let's just be realistic about that. Let's be honest about that. You have to work with staff to sort of say, look, for some of these kids going to college for a day a week and the college for us is over an hour away, they're going to miss a period of your class. So you have to work with staff to say, well, how can we fill the gap of that digitally so the kids still aren't missing out? So you have to really work with staff and motivate them and talk with them and provide them with strategies of being more flexible. But I guess the picture that I'm trying to make is that it is possible, it is sustainable. It just takes time to develop, and you've got to think about things in a different way rather than a traditional model. And I think that one of the biggest failures of curriculum for excellence nationally is that we had and we still have a great opportunity there, but you've taken this incredibly flexible, I think, and incredibly great curriculum if you've got great teachers, and you've tried to retrofit it into a new model. And I think some of the most successful schools in recent years are schools that have said, right, how do we take what's possible to do here and adapt our traditional model to make what is possible fit, if that makes sense. I feel like I've waffled there a bit, but hopefully I've sort of got my message across.
Ollie, I'm sure listeners from far and wide will be, really appreciate your honesty and giving us a real strong flavour of how you've gone about working at King Lucy. I could listen to you all night, Ollie. It's terrific stuff, and you can tell that there's a real kind of long tail here in terms of your experience and your reading and your, I suppose, your networking. We've always talked about that in the past, and your online and your real life links, and you've clearly been influenced by so many great educationalists. Time is getting the better of us, and I would like to hear a little bit about two things. One, how you're working online these days, and a bit about, you know, what you're thinking in terms of your own website that I know back in the day was must have been one of the most popular across the world. But also about, you know, who is influencing you in terms of the practicalities of running a school, but also in terms of who's influencing you with regards to the bigger picture about communities, about future work. It'd be great to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, no, great. I mean, it's a funny thing. I kind of feel that I've been keeping a blog It's not been very active in recent months, years. But I've been writing online, I guess, for over a decade now, which is really interesting. And going back to my career story, I started to write that blog on my first day as a principal teacher of geography. And you can still use the Wayback Machine to find those early articles. And then there's kind of, you know, 9 years worth of stuff on my own website, which is olliebraid.com, and you can find it. But I in my career have faced quite a few challenges of writing online because sometimes if you're employed by somebody and you're writing online and you're trying to give an opinion, I think sometimes people don't like that. You know, I think that sometimes people think, you know, you're writing your blog and you're trying to share things, and if you're doing that, then you're not working on your day job, which was certainly never the case with me. I always tried to write my blog in my own time, and I was actually there were two reasons for writing it. One is that I was fascinated by the technology at the time, and the second reason was is that I wanted to share, but I also wanted to sort of try and improve my writing, you know, and to be quite public about that was an important thing for me to be able to do. I'll be honest, is that since taking on the head teacher role at CUNY, I've stepped back a little bit from writing on the blog in terms of what I do on a day-to-day basis. And maybe there was a nervousness there around the perception of that with like working with new staff and what they would think about that. Would they really want what was going through my head on an everyday basis being broadcast out there? I don't personally think that's a bad thing, but I think I took over the school at quite a sensitive time. But I've actually just been doing a piece of work over the last sort of few weeks of the October holiday where looking to migrate a lot of the old content and shift that over to a new domain, which is going to be linked with some research that I'm just starting. And as part of that, I've been working on 10 little school improvement stories. So the things that we've been doing at CUNY over the last 4 to 5 years, and the success that we can demonstrate through attainment and wider achievement and successes in recruitment and I guess sort of pupil happiness and parental engagement and staff happiness and all these things that we can kind of evidence now because we've got, you know, 4 to coming on 5 years worth of data. And the plan is to shift this over to the new domain and then to start, if you like, publishing these little improvement stories, we're going to launch it on the 1st of January so people can sort of chip in and look at that and read about that. And along with each of these improvement stories, there will be a resource that people can use, take away. It's licensed under Creative Commons, and hopefully adapt and use it in their own schools. So, for example, I've just finished writing, at the back end, one that's on profiling and using ePortfolio and how that works and tracking kids into the senior phase. And my idea behind it is that that seems to be working here at CUNY. Some schools might be able to take that and retrofit that into their own school and own environment. Most schools will be able to take that and take the bits that they think are relevant. But the point of it is they should be able to take the bits that are relevant. And then what I'm keen for them to do is to use it, share it, and hopefully that will improve things. It's kind of like a mini little improvement hub of stuff that we kind of know that works. And one of the reasons that I've been doing that is I've been lucky just recently to do a bit of work with Skell on their sort of fellowship program. And I was really pleased to sort of apply to that and to be supportive of the local authority to do that and to be taken on board by Skell. And I'm doing the the fellowship program, which is about system leadership. And I, to be honest, I started off that program. I didn't really know what I thought system leadership was. I thought it was about working at a high level in the system, which obviously I'd done previously at Learning and Teaching in Scotland, the Scottish Government, and Education in Scotland. But I've completely changed my impression on that now. And I think that if I was to define system leadership, the attributes of a good system leader is that you care as much about the children in somebody else's school and the staff in somebody else's school and the parents in somebody else's school as you do about the staff, the parents and the children in your own school. And that's one of the reasons why I'm keen to do this, like to sort of try and publish this work that other people might be able to sort of take it and use it, because I'm keen to develop my own, if you like, system leadership capacity, but at the same time remain a head teacher. And one of the guys that's really influenced my thinking on this just recently is a guy called Clive Dimmock, Professor Clive Dimmock, from the University of Glasgow. He's been quite challenging towards my thinking in many ways. I was fascinated, just completely coincidentally, to realise that he'd written an article for the OEDC about 4 years ago, which was about how do you turn schools into innovative 21st century learning environments. I was even more fascinated to find out that Intel, the technology company Intel, had taken his original OECD paper and watered that down into quite a simplified model. And then we had a great conversation about the fact that I'd taken that Intel model, which was around curriculum, policy, ICT, sustainable resourcing, teacher professional development, and we'd used that as a starting point for some of our discussions with the staff at King's Lee High School. So just in terms of some of Clive's research and what some of Clive's been doing in terms of what I almost have been doing due to Clive's research without knowing it was his research, I'm quite keen now to publish these examples of what we've done to improve my capacity as a systems leader, but also, to try and help and assist and support, some of the other head teachers or schools out there that maybe need either, a bit of direction in quite a confusing, quite a turbulent time, I think, in terms of Scottish education at the moment with so much change.
And just with that in mind, Ollie, just maybe to finish up, what advice would you give to people who are maybe considering moving into or applying to maybe different parts of the country where they know that there's possibly shortages within leadership positions, or just generally, looking for promoted posts within their own area, within the specific context and challenges of Scottish education? What kind of advice would you give them?
I think there's a few things people can do. I mean, I think a really, really important thing is to network, and that might be online networking via things like Twitter or the Google Educators Group or the Microsoft University Teachers Group or the expert group. But just to kind of network, to connect with other people, to see other things, because I think that the thing that we really lack at the moment in Scottish education is this looking forwards agenda, and I think that one of the challenges that we've got is that lots and lots of school leaders don't know what is possible, if that makes sense. And the only way that what is possible is either by getting loads and loads of experience by working in lots of different schools over short periods of time, or is by talking to people and finding out what they've done, and then trying to take the best bits of those conversations, and then to apply that into your own setting. And I was just thinking about this today, and this links into one of the articles that I'm going to sort of publish in the new year. But I think that the role of a modern head teacher is to, when you inherit a school and you work in a school, is that one of the things that we're trying to do is we spend a lot of time fixing the past. Like as a head teacher, I spend an awful lot of time, working with pupils on relationships, trying to fix a problem which has been caused by a budget cut, or because somebody's fallen out with each other, or because there's a staff grievance. I spend a lot of time trying to fix stuff that's already happened, which I've got no control of, for whatever reason. But at the same time, as a head teacher, you always have to deal with what's coming through your door at the next second. So you're trying to fix the past, dealing with problems, if you like, but you're trying to remain in the now and deal with those issues and those successes and those kids that walk through your door. But the bit that I think that we lack a lot of the time as good leaders is that we must have almost an unashamedly focused look on the future, what's happening next. And I would say that if I was going to sort of try and split that down into something, is that what you probably should be doing is spend sort of 30% of your time trying to fix the past, you know, 30 to 40% of the time, you know, sort of trying to deal with the now, but a big chunk of time, you know, the rest of the time trying to concentrate on the future, trying to strategically plan, trying to network, trying to see what comes next. And my perception from chatting to head teachers and chatting to other school leaders is that at best at the moment we probably only spend 2 or 3% of our time on that. But in the best schools, like globally, I think it's people that they're dealing with the past, they're focusing on the now to make sure everybody's happy, but they've also got a real clear picture on where they want to go next. And the reason they're able to do that is because they network well with other people. They swap ideas. They don't get offended, you know, if somebody criticised them because they're professional individuals.
Ollie, thank you so much for taking a large chunk out of your Wednesday evening to join us on AG Talk. I know you've had a long day travelling to one of these networking meetings, and I'm sure you've got a busy end to the week. I really, really do appreciate you taking time out. It's educational gold, so to speak, you know, to hear you reflect on the last few years, and maybe a period of your career that many of us might not be aware of because of your particular approach to working recently and different approaches to using online spaces. So it's been great for myself, I'm sure for everyone else, to kind of get a kind of virtual catch up with you. It's greatly appreciated, and always extend an invitation for you to join us on the show in the future. If you know people have got kind of questions or queries for you, Ollie, what would be the best way for them to get in touch?
I'm very happy for them to send me a direct message via Twitter or tweet me directly publicly, or my email is just ollie.bray@kingucihigh.org.uk, and I'll share my paper with you, David, on which is titled The Curriculum Drives Attainment, and it links into some of the things that we've been doing at King UC.
That's great, Ollie. We'll get that up alongside the audio later on. So thanks again, and best wishes to you and Louise for the future.
Yeah, thanks, David. It's been great to speak to you, and great to catch up.